Whoops. So that's where we have to start. Does the scriptures teach that everyone preaches, therefore there is no office of a preacher or an evangelist? Or do the scriptures teach that everyone preaches, but there is still a specific office that is set forth in the scriptures? George?
We need to keep in mind the difference between preach and teach. They're not the same thing.
How would you...
In one sense, they're not. Just like you said about your wife and bandaging your skin knee. She's doing something that is a medical function, but she's not a medical person.
Right. Yeah. And that would be true, because when Jeannie trains my children in the way that they should go, is she a preacher or a teacher?
She's a teacher.
Well, she's teaching them, but she's not a teacher in the sense of the scriptures, because what does Paul say in 1 Timothy 2 about that? I permit not a woman to teach or have dominion. Well, yeah, no, I understand that. But she can't be a teacher in one sense, even though all women are teachers in another sense. So, you have your hand up?
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Okay. Well, you went like that. That man's going to hit me? Or?
Well, I shouldn't have asked this now.
No,
but
go ahead.
I'm curious as to why they're pushing back over there. Now, there was this movement here. I don't know how prevalent it is in the United States, about mutual edification, that, you know, if we don't need preachers, we just need the men getting up there having positive sermons, and you know, it seems like if you have a preacher, he kind of steps on your toes. So what's the reason they're pushing back in Malawi?
Well, there's two reasons. First of all, the preachers were corrupt. Preachers were kind of like the false prophets, committing adultery, taking money, using their position to things that are inappropriate. And so that made the people ripe, because the people were disgusted with what these preachers were doing. The second issue was this committee wanted power. And the preachers were preaching against the committee because the committee had power in the church? None. So they were preaching against preachers, and the brethren didn't like them anyway because they were ungodly. So that's kind of how it worked. And now these preachers are going into other districts and creating a great problem. So we're trying to crush it. And I think that that lessons like this are going to be able to do that. So anyway, there's two major arguments that I like to use. The first one is right under the introduction, where Paul says, well, let's see, who wants to read? Brian, you want to read that for us? 1 Corinthians 9, 13, 14.
Do you not know that those who minister the holy things eat of the things of the temple, and those who serve at the altar partake of the offerings of the altar? Even so, the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should live from the gospel.
Okay. So, under the old covenant, the tithe was given to who?
The priests.
No, well, not specifically. Who was the tithe given to? A whole tribe.
The Levites.
The priests were given every sacrifice, every vow, every first fruit, all of the free will offerings, everything that the people brought into the temple went to the priests. And you can read all about that in Numbers 18, because God is very specific here. I'm giving you this and this and this and this and this, and I'm giving you the Levites to minister, and I'm causing the other tribes to take care of the Levites so that all of you can put your full time into taking care of my tabernacle and taking care of the spiritual needs of my people. So is there any question that the priests were an office and that the Levites was an office under the old covenant? No question at all. And Paul makes that point here. Those who minister the holy things, that's the Levites, and those who serve at the altar, that's the Aaronic priesthood, they both are fully supported by that work. Then he says, even so the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should live of the gospel. So who are these people that should be paid to preach the gospel? As Paul went on to say, if we sowed unto you spiritual things, is it any great thing if we reap what? Your physical or carnal things. So there's a group of people, when they all went everywhere preaching the word, were they all paid? And if they were paid, how were they paid? See, if you don't have the job, if you don't have the office, then you don't receive the pay. If you're being paid for something, doesn't that generally mean you're giving all of your time and all of your energy and all of your efforts to it? And that's what an evangelist or a preacher is. It's someone who has dedicated their lives completely to preaching, teaching, studying, evangelism, edification, doing the work of an evangelist. So the fact that there is a group of men who are to be paid by the churches, remember Paul saying, I robbed other churches to preach for you. So the first point, of course, this one won't work in Malawi. You know why? They don't believe in paying preachers. Because in John chapter 10, anybody who takes money is a hireling. So anytime you pay a preacher, he becomes a hireling. And since Jesus condemned the hireling, preachers shouldn't be paid. Now that's their... So you got to go five steps back before you can come to this argument. First time I tried to use it, the whole church just broke out. They couldn't believe that I would make this point because this is not done. This is a false teaching. So you got to go back. So this one's not as good as it could be, but we're going to work on changing that. Now, did you have your hand up, Patrick?
Yeah. So I was thinking about concerning who are to preach the gospel. Okay, if you go back to Matthew chapter 20, okay, Jesus sent the church. He said, go ye into the world to preach the gospel. Okay. And if you look at Romans chapter 10, if you read 14 downward, it was the same instruction that Paul making. He said, how then can they call on the name they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one of whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? And how can they preach unless they are sent? See what Paul is saying? Because the church has to be sent. You know, just as you used the illustration concerning not everybody can be a preacher, but everybody can preach. Okay? Because if you read 1 Timothy chapter 3, you see the office of the preacher is quite different from preaching the gospel. Because if you read the book of Acts chapter 17, you see the believer preaching that Aquila and Priscilla preaching to what? To Apollo. You see, but they are now our preachers.
Right.
You see, so preaching the word is quite different from the office of preaching.
Exactly. Yeah. But they can't make that distinction. So you're right, and I've used some of those points. Maybe you'd like to come to Malawi with me this year. All right, so the second point is in Ephesians chapter 4, where it says that Jesus gave gifts unto men. All right, in Ephesians 4, right in the middle of the page. Jeannie, you want to read that for us?
And he himself gave some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some shepherds and teachers, for the equipping of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ.
Okay, so what do we see here? We see what? Five offices. Is an apostle an office? Could just anybody be an apostle?
No,
there were only 12. And then, of course, there were two more added because Judas fell away and the lot fell with who?
Matthias.
You know the reason I asked that? Because I couldn't remember. Thank you, Martha. I'm sorry. I thought, man, what if nobody knows? I'll be sunk. Anyway, the second person was Paul. But other than that, there were none. How about a prophet? How did you get appointed to the office of a prophet?
Spiritual gifts.
Okay, through the laying on of the apostles' hands, the Holy Spirit put you in that office. If you didn't have the ability to prophesy, couldn't be a prophet. All right. Then the evangelists, then the elders. Is the elders in office? Can anybody be an elder? I'm an old man, so I should be ruling the church, right? No, that's an office. The eldership is an office with qualifications. And the same thing with the teachers here. Although we have not, as a people, really focused on that teacher position, and yet it is a position in the Lord's church. It is something Jesus gave to the church. Is apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, and teachers. So these are offices. And in 1 Corinthians, what is it, chapter, is it the end of 14, where it says that the Lord has put into the church first apostles, then prophets, then teachers, then ministrations of spiritual gifts. So these are offices. Now, the apostles and prophets were a temporary office because did the Lord make arrangements or provisions to appoint prophets and apostles after the first set died? See, there is none. So do we have apostles and prophets today? Well, that's a trick question. Do we have apostles and prophets today? We have to. Because if we don't, how do we build ourselves on the foundation of the apostles and prophets? We don't have any. Yeah, we have them. Who are they? Well, it's just like Moses. Moses was a lawgiver. Did the children of Israel ever consider that they didn't have Moses as their lawgiver? Matter of fact, Jesus gets into an argument with the Pharisees when they say, your teacher, da-da-da-da-da, but we are disciples of Moses. Now, how can they be disciples of Moses? Moses was dead. Well, because they were following his law. Now, that's what we do. We accept the New Testament scriptures, four prophets, four apostles, and then an unknown book. So, Mark, Luke, James, and Jude are prophets. They wrote by inspiration. Matthew, John, Paul, and Peter are apostles. Then we come to Hebrews, and who wrote Hebrews?
The Holy Spirit.
Yeah, that's what I say. But it was either a prophet or an apostle, right? It had to be one or the other, either an apostle or a prophet. So when we build on the New Testament scriptures, how does the Lord want us to look at that? What are we really building on? The apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ being the chief cornerstone. And then Paul makes this point in Ephesians 3. This is toward the bottom of page 1. I'm not going to read it, but let's just touch on it. What was not made known in other generations has now been made known to who? His holy apostles and prophets. So the office of the apostles and prophets gave us the New Testament scriptures. And for the first generation, who fulfilled Matthew 28, 18 through 20? Go to all nations, teach them to observe everything I commanded you. Who did that? Well, the apostles did. The apostles and prophets did, because how else would they know what the Lord had commanded them? But after the first century, who's the primary person to do what is commanded in Matthew 28, 18 through 20? The evangelist. Can the elders do it? Tend the flock of God among you. Can they leave that flock and go into all the world and preach the gospel as elders? No. Now, I used to tell the brethren, because I was an elder in Portland for quite a few years, and then I was an elder in St. Louis for quite a few years, and I would tell them, I didn't come here as an elder. When I left that church building, what did I leave? Or not that church building, but when I left those people behind, what did I leave behind? My eldership. I can't go to Malawi as an elder. Can't go anywhere as an elder. But what can I go as? An evangelist or a teacher? And so the position or the role of the work of the church, the evangelist, it falls on the evangelist to go into all the world and preach the gospel because they're the ones who can do that. Paul tells Titus, I want you to appoint elders where? In every city. But could the elders do that? No, because the elders, their authority ends at the door of the building. Or, you know, I keep putting it that way. That's not true. It ends when they're no longer around the flock that appointed them, the flock that is among them. And so the office of an evangelist, if we remove that from the church, we're in serious trouble, because now do we have a group of people who are going to do that? You know, we have a saying in our country: if it's everybody's responsibility, it's what?
Nobody's.
So if everyone is supposed to go into all the world and preach the gospel, who's going to do it? Probably nobody. But if you've got men who are dedicated to doing that, paid by the churches to go do that, then that's going to get done. And that's the authority we see in the New Testament. Because not only was Paul an apostle, he was also a preacher. And the preacher is the one that those who preach the gospel should live in the gospel. It doesn't say apostles there. Okay, so the evangelist's role is captured for us, because this word is only used three times in the New Testament. It's used in Ephesians chapter 4, the office of an evangelist. Who are the only two people who are identified as evangelists? Timothy was one. Anybody, for a gold star, where will we find that? Okay, 2 Timothy 4. Do the work of an evangelist. Can you do the work of an evangelist if you're not an evangelist? So, do the work of an evangelist. Then, there's one more. Philip. Okay, exactly. Philip. Philip is called an evangelist in the, what is it, the 20th chapter? 21st chapter? Somewhere in there. Paul is going to Jerusalem, and he stops off at Caesarea, and Philip's still there. Well, where was Philip before Acts chapter 20 or 21 there? Where's the last time we see him? Okay, chapter 8, right? First he goes to Samaria, and he converts and starts a church there. Then he goes to the Ethiopian eunuch. Then he goes to Azotus, and he goes to, I can't remember the other place. Then he ends up in where? Last time we read of him, he's in Caesarea. 20, 25 years later, he's still in Caesarea. Now he's got four virgin daughters who are prophesying, and he's doing the work there. So what do we learn about an evangelist then? We learn, first of all, that he can go into other areas and preach and start churches. In the Ethiopian eunuch, what do we learn about evangelists? He can go talk to individuals, right? He can go talk to individuals. Then, that passage in Acts, he's an evangelist. You know, this is an argument I heard younger. I don't hear too much of it anymore. But evangelists have to be going from place to place. You can't be a local preacher and be an evangelist. You ever heard that?
Yes.
That was a big problem back in the Restoration movement. They felt like those preachers who were going out and preaching outside of where they lived were evangelists, and the people who stayed home were second class. But what we're going to learn is fascinating to me, because once the churches are established, it's no longer the responsibility of the evangelist to do the preaching to the... Well, let me rephrase that. It's no longer exclusively the responsibility of the evangelist. He has the same responsibility as every other Christian. But if you carefully read 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, and Titus, guess what you're never going to find there as what he should be doing? Preaching to the lost. It's not there. What's there is reprove, rebuke, exhort the brethren. Work with the brethren. Be an example for the brethren. Teach them. Work with them. Reprove them. Rebuke them. As a matter of fact, everything that I can see, and once the church is established, and you even see this with Paul. He goes to Ephesus. He starts the church there. Then what does he do for 2 years? Over 2 years. He teaches daily. Well, wait a minute. I thought Paul went out and preached to all the lost areas. All Asia heard the word, but Paul didn't take it to them. Who took it to them? Well, the brethren did. People who were in the classes. So the work, and I've thought about this a lot. If the preacher's so busy with evangelism that the church never grows to become a solid church, what's going to happen to all those new converts he's bringing into the church? They're going to fall away, because the church is going to fall away unless it's been grounded. Go ahead, Virgil.
You're absolutely correct. Okay, with that said.
Thank you. But
there's a lot of churches today, when you get out and start milling around and go to different churches, where they do not believe that you need to have an evangelist, and it's not because they can't afford to have one. Okay? They think that that needs to be passed around the brethren or the elders. And they completely, totally miss the fact that the evangelist, one of his responsibilities is to reprove and rebuke. Now, how can he do this unless he sees what's going on and establish criteria to fight those things?
Right.
It's a full-time job, is what it is. And my experience with congregations that don't have evangelists is that they don't last very long as being faithful or well-grounded.
Right.
They don't know how to deal with problems because nobody has taught them.
Yeah.
And that's why Paul spends a lot of time in Timothy talking about the responsibilities. Give heed to reading. Give heed. Give diligence to present yourself approved to God. The time that a preacher spends in his study is just as important and maybe even more important than the time he spends up teaching people, because if he's not grounded, what can he do?
Yeah,
he can't do anything. George, and then Brian.
I think there's another problem in the church today, and that is that because of the people who think that the preacher is supposed to do all the preaching and teaching, that they don't think they have to teach. And that's a problem too, as well as what Virgil said, where there's congregations that don't think you ever need a preacher.
Right. Yeah, and I've really wrestled with that. You know, most congregations I've ever preached at, I teach Wednesday night, I teach Sunday. And when do the men get a chance to grow and develop themselves? And, of course, that's what we do here as well. I've really, you know, I've wrestled with it, because hopefully if you've got a good preacher, can he do a little better job than anyone else? I'm being very careful here because I'm not saying that's true. I just said hopefully that would be the case. But if the preacher does everything, then what does that give the opportunity for the men to do? See, so they don't get forced. I've found through the years, and I'm sure you have too, you get a lot more when you have to study to do the teaching than you do when you just come sit in the class, right? So it's a conundrum. I agree with George there. It's a really tough one there. So when I get back from Malawi, I'm just going to preach Sunday morning, and the rest of you men are going to have to step up here. Yeah, that would work real well, wouldn't it? Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, you know what's interesting also is sometimes people fail to consider how unique of a period of time it was we're reading about in the New Testament. It's like Paul sending Titus to appoint elders. We would never do that today. There would be no need to do that because the church was in its infancy. It was just starting to grow, and I think whether it's Malawi or just brethren in general,
or India for that matter.
Yeah, India, yeah. Right. They can fail to make a distinction about Paul's journeys and why they were doing the things that they were doing and what a church and an evangelist would be doing today. And so I appreciate you sifting through all of this, because it's easy to get off on a tangent when it's like, hang on a second here, you know. There are some foundational principles, but then there are also some circumstances that were unique to that period of time as the church grew. And you have to be able to make that distinction and not bind something that was unique to the first century.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Patrick?
Yeah, let's look at Romans chapter 12, verse 6. Paul may declare, he said, we have different gifts according to the grace given us. See, he said, we, that means as a church.
Mm-hmm.
Each and every one of us have a gift. Now, one question, how then when you look at Acts chapter 15, you see something happened, that commotion broke up in the church when Paul and Barnabas were arguing with the false brethren concerning circumcision in the church. What Paul and Barnabas did was they went to the church in Jerusalem and they met the elders and the apostles to present the case. So that means these people were in the spiritual, they were a spiritual guardian, you see? So what Paul and Barnabas did was to inquire for them whether this thing is right or wrong. So, you know, this is why God put people in the positions so that the church can be edified and grow spiritually, but not for one person to take the burden and everybody relax. Because what we should understand that because brethren in the church, I will put it in the biblical term, they are very busy to study the Bible and to commit ourselves to the Lord. So for that reason, people are afraid to take a leadership position as elder or apostle, which is very wrong. We need to pray about it and take into consideration the task that God has given us.
Right. Yeah, I definitely think that's correct. All right, so the evangelists that's illustrated in the scriptures are Timothy and Titus. Even though Titus is never identified as one, he fits everything Timothy is doing. So that brings us, let's go ahead now, and obviously we're not going to finish this today. I never really intended to. Let's just hit the highlights here of the work of an evangelist. On page 3, toward the top, we have the key verse and the work, the role, the responsibility, and the need for an evangelist. And so he sets it forth here. Let's see. Charles, you want to read verses that Timothy, 1 Timothy chapter 4. And let's just read verses 1 and 2, first of all. I don't want to really read 3 and 4.
2 Timothy chapter 4?
Yeah, right in the middle of page, right toward the top of page 3, right under the work of an evangelist.
Okay. Yes, as I charge you therefore before God and the Lord Jesus Christ, who will judge the living and the dead as appearing and his kingdom. Preach the word, be ready in season and out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with all long suffering and teaching.
Okay, the then will come. No, then just read 5.
Oh, 5. Okay. But be sober in all things, endure affliction, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry.
Okay, so the responsibility to preach the word, to be urgent, to be in season and out of season, to reprove, rebuke, exhort with all long suffering, falls squarely on the work of an evangelist. Now, as I mentioned earlier, anyone can put a Band-Aid on someone and do the portion of the work of the doctor. So can a member of this congregation get up and reprove, rebuke, and exhort? Absolutely. And they should be. But there's one individual that's what they do. That's what they are paid to do. That's their role, their office, their responsibility. And it was interesting, as I went through these things, there's 10 in 1 Timothy, 10 in 2 Timothy, and then I think there's 8 or 9 in Titus. And that's the job description of a preacher. So these first 4, 5 that are on page 3, I'm not going to spend too much time with because we just talked about them. But let's just quickly go through and let's look at the work of evangelist as is outlined by Paul in 1 Timothy. So let's go to page 4. Let's just quickly run through these. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on anyone, but it's important. So, one of the first responsibilities of an evangelist in 1 Timothy 3, I left you at Ephesus to do what? We've been preaching on it for the last 5 weeks. Charge certain men not to teach different doctrines or false doctrines. The foundation of the church is the apostles' doctrines and the prophets' doctrines. If somebody's teaching something else, what's the role of the evangelist? Charge them not to do it. Tell them that's not correct. Then in 1 Timothy 3, Paul said, I'm writing these things to you so that you will know what? How people ought to conduct themselves in the church. And if you look at what he's just talked about in chapter 2, or chapter 1 is all about false teaching. Chapter 2 is worship. Men pray in every place. Women in modest apparel. Permit not a woman to teach or have dominion over a man. Chapter 3, the qualifications for the shepherds, the qualifications for the deacons. Then chapter 3 at the end, this, I'm writing you these things so you will know how men ought to conduct themselves, or you ought to conduct yourself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God. So it's a job description. This is a responsibility of an evangelist to make sure the worship's being done properly, to make sure that the church is growing and developing elders. Then he starts going through number 3 in 1 Timothy 4. If you instruct the brethren in these things, you will be a good minister. So you instruct the brethren, and you will be a good minister. Then number 4, bodily exercise profits a little, but godliness profits for all things. Look at verse 11. These things command and teach. So you be preaching to people. Godliness is more important than financial gain. Godliness is not a way of gain, but godliness is a way to get yourself right with the Lord. All right, let's go ahead and turn to the next page, 5. Let no one despise your youth. How does a preacher fulfill that command? How do you keep people from despising your youth? Well, you don't do anything dumb, right? If a young man does something dumb, what does that mean? Ah, he's just wet behind the ears, right? He's still wet behind the ears. In other words, you're because you're a youth and you've done this, you've damaged your ability to work as a preacher. Now, that's one way. The other way would be when you get up and preach a very weighty sermon, and when you get done, somebody comes up to you and says, you know, you're a young man, and when you get older, you'll understand why. Should a preacher let people despise his youth like that? If he's preached his convictions and he knows they're in the scriptures, should he stand? Or should he say, oh, okay, I'll defer to you because you're an older man? Don't let anybody despise your youth. Youth is not necessarily a problem. Matter of fact, when Job's three friends came and they couldn't do anything, who's this Elihu guy? He's the young man who says, I wanted age to speak first. Did he get to the heart of the matter? Should they have despised his youth? Absolutely not. All right, so don't let anyone despise your youth. Be an example to the brethren. Number 6, make sure that you're an example in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity. You don't just preach it, you live it. All right, number 7, meditate on these things. Give yourselves entirely to them, that your progress may be evident to all. Take heed to yourself and to the doctrine. Continue in them, for in doing this you will save who?
Both yourself and those who hear.
Yeah, yourself and those who hear. And I like to go back to James, because what did James say in chapter 3? Be not many
teachers.
Of you teachers, because you will receive a stricter judgment. So if you want to save yourself, then meditate. Never stop thinking about. I was thinking about Joshua. As a matter of fact, I should have put Joshua in here. I may do that because this is the curriculum we're going to be handing out. But Joshua was told that if you never stop talking about, never stop thinking about, and never stop keeping the law of the Lord, you will make your way successful. So, Patrick?
Yeah, you see, one of the problems of our young preachers is very, very wrong for a man to be a young preacher and just take the pulpit. Because, you see, this is what we look at, Timothy's lifestyle. You are always guided by Paul. Paul always guided him and teach him how he should live and why he should preach. So many people just graduate from the Bible college and just become preacher and eventually they destroy the church. Because if you read the Old Testament all the way to the New Testament, for example, then look at Joshua. Joshua was under the leadership of Moses. You see, he was guided by Moses.
Right.
Then look at Samuel. Samuel he did not just work on God or prophet, but he was on Eli. You see, until God had to take Eli from there and put him there. And then look at David. Okay? David, although God anointed him when he was a little boy, but he did not become king right away until he got full mature man. See, because God cannot put a little bit in your office. You put people there as a mature person. This is why when you read the book of Galatians chapter 4, Paul makes it very clear that we're a little baby, okay? And when we full grow, the heart God can give you the office.
Right.
You see, God, If you let go, when you look at the churches of Christ, most of the churches of Christ are being destroyed is because of you who are not being trained by the elders or the older preachers to teach them how they should make their life. For example, you are going to Malawi, you are full grown a preacher, you are well advanced. You are going to educate the people how to be a preacher, how to preach the walk, and how to stand for the truth. This is what Paul wrote in the book of 2 Timothy chapter 4. Putting what? Timothy honor or old. How you should preach the walk, out of season and in season. And you should what? Be strong.
Right.
You see, that this is why most of our young preachers need to learn from the old preacher before they get to
the right. And Timothy's been with Paul for at least 15 years now. He was a young man when he got him, and 15 years later, let's say he was 18, so now he's what, 30, 33, 34 years old, and he's still a what to Paul? Young man, don't let anybody despise your youth. So we're not talking about 15-year-old kids here. We're talking about people in their late 20s, early 30s, who still, through, you know, it's always funny to me, I tell George how old I am and how I make it, and you know what he always says? You're just a young kid. That's how he sees me. And isn't that how older people see younger people? So those of you, I'm 68, and those of you who are in your 70s and 80s, how do you see me? You're just a kid. You're just a young kid. Well, I can't let people despise the scriptures by calling me a young kid. It's just like all the persecutions that people give. They will use whatever they can find to try to damage the messenger. Should the messenger allow that to happen? For example, you think anybody threw in Paul's face that he had persecuted the church and that he was a hypocrite and now he was preaching for the church? You think anybody ever might have said that? Was Paul going to let that stop him? No. So, okay. So let's go ahead and turn to page 6. We're not going to get through this, obviously. But as a matter of fact, I just want to read through them so you can get an overview, because the bell's going to be rung here in just a minute. So number 8 is, observe these things without prejudice, doing nothing with partiality. Fight the good fight of faith, lay hold of eternal life, guard what was committed to your trust. Okay, so that's 1 Timothy. 2 Timothy, do not be ashamed of the Lord's testimony or of me, his prisoner. Number 2, hold fast the pattern. Number 3, be strong in the grace. Number 4, the things you have heard from me, commit to faithful men. All right, let's go ahead and turn to page 7. Endure hardship as a soldier, an athlete, and a farmer. And then that's all he says, and then he says, you figure it out. And I think here what we have is we have some general concepts that have a lot of different ways to approach them, and depending on how the individual wants to deal with it. So what does a soldier do? Well, he fights for his country. Does he suffer hardship? Yeah. Does he complain? Well, he might, but in his heart he does. In other words, this is what a preacher should do. There's going to be hardships for the preacher. Number 2, an athlete. And it's interesting, in 1 Corinthians 9, he talks about the prowess of the athlete, but what does he talk about here? Competing lawfully. If you win the race, but you've broken a rule, what happens? Going to be disqualified. So many people today, they want their churches to be filled, but what do they have to do to get their churches to be filled?
Break the rules.
Now, at the end, since they're an athlete supposed to be competing by the rules, the fact that they won, in the sense that they got many more people than this other person, is that going to do them any good? Not a bit. Then the farmer, he's the one who is growing the crops, and he's the one who should be the first to partake of the fruits. Now, again, there's different ways to look at this. I've always looked at this, that if you're preaching, but you're not partaking of what you're preaching, ultimately, what are people going to think about you? You preach it, but you don't live it.
You're a hypocrite.
Yeah, you're a hypocrite. So the hardworking farmer has to be the first to partake of the fruits. Now, that's one way of looking at it. And again, you may have different ways of looking at it. I really think that the reason they're so general here is so that we can apply it to our situation, whatever that situation might be. All right. Number six, remind them, charging them not to strive about words to no profit. Number seven, be diligent, present yourself a worker who needs not be ashamed, handling aright the word of truth. Flee youthful lusts, pursue righteousness and faith, and correct those who are in opposition. So that's another responsibility. Number nine, carefully follow. Follow my example. Then number eight, continue in the things that you have learned. And then, of course, all of those verses in chapter 4 that we talked about, preaching the word urgently in season, out of season, reproving, rebuking, all of that. Then we come to Titus, set in order the things that are wanting. So that's a responsibility of an evangelist, to make sure he's setting in order the things that are wanting. Rebuke certain people sharply. Number three, speak what is proper for sound doctrine. There's certain things that have to be done as a result of sound doctrine. All right, then we come to page 9. Show yourself a model of good works so that they can't say anything evil about you. Speak these things, exhort and rebuke with all authority. Remind them to be subject to rulers, to fulfill their responsibilities and obligations, to speaking evil of no one. Number seven, affirm constantly. Avoid. Reject. And then finally, let our people learn to maintain good works, to meet urgent needs, and to not be unfruitful. Now, these are the job description of an evangelist. And if an evangelist wants to assess whether he's doing a good job or not, he needs to look at all of these things. There's like 30 some of them. And when, you know, through the years, I've been criticized by people. And if they draw from these qualities, what do I have to do as a preacher? I better listen to them. But when they're criticizing things that aren't even in here, then what do I do? You just have to discount it because they're dealing with their own personal pet peeves. I had a woman in Oroville back when I was a young man. I think I was 26, 27 then. I guess a little lower than that, in my early 30s. And she said, "We need a cheerleader. You're always preaching negative sermons. Don't you know a preacher should always be uplifting and preaching those good things from the scriptures?" What did I have to do with that good advice? You know, how many times does the Lord talk about good and uplifting things, and how many times is he preaching negative lessons to the Jews? So he's constantly. Didn't John come? What did John come cheerleading about? Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Virgil?
Is this the fact of life? Negative preaching, I'll call it that, that's what people call it. Many, many times is more effective than the cheerleader. And it's the job of an evangelist to be able to do that.
Right.
And we should not take and resent negative teaching. We ought to take and thank him for doing it.
Well, that's what some of them did, but she never did. She never liked that at all.
We've had them here too, Ellen.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Well, what I often say is, okay, reprove, rebuke, and exhort. So 2-1 at least, right? Reproving and rebuking versus exhorting. You can be a cheerleader 1/3 of the time, but you need to, you know. But I think I was probably in my early days of preaching a much more negative person and negative preacher than I am now. But you can tell me after, Alan, you're still the most negative preacher we've ever had.
Well, I think what we call negative in the scripture is very positive.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that if somebody's doing something wrong, you reprove them. And that's not negative preaching. That's the height of positive preaching to get you going in the right direction. That's how I see it. All right. Anyway, let's stop there. And appreciate you guys being guinea pigs this morning and getting a chance. You can tell me if you think there's anything I should change in here. And we'll probably be doing this until I leave because I've got just a bunch of work I have to do to get all these things ready to go over there. So. All right, appreciate it, everybody. Let's stop there.